And we're back, 7:32 now. News Talk 1079, Neil Larson, Julie Mason, and joining us in studio wearing his signature John Deere green hat is Brian Murdoch, our friend. Brian, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Neil?
Good. The bruises are almost gone after the election's over. So,
yes. I put makeup on so you can't see him this morning.
Yes, it did. At any rate, welcome. It's been a little while since we've had you here, so we thought, let's reach out to Brian. Water's always an important issue. There are other issues to talk about, too, though, so...
Sure.
Give us the temperature. Where are we at?
The temperature right now is, of course, we are running out of water as far as the surface system. And this was, of course, due to the low snowpack, which we've had. I was so grateful it rained the other day. Even though that was we got very little rain out of it, we need every drop of moisture we can get out of a rain cloud. And so please, everyone, keep praying for moisture. But the surface systems, they will run out of water this year at various points, and it all depends on which canal system you're working on. We did not fill the reservoir system this year with what we have. In fact, we're pretty low right now, and so every canal is making cutbacks. There was a lot of farmers who changed crop rotations, or they changed positions of, you know, their farms where these crops were based on surface water or groundwater. And so adjustments have been being made. I don't know, for instance, if we will get 4 or 3 full crops of hay this year. We might end up only with 2, 2.5. And so the tonnage of hay could be impacted very much.
Yeah.
With the price of cows, that's going to hurt a little bit. Spud crop will be impacted because I believe there's been a few folks that have cut back on the acres, especially because the price the year before was a lot lower. But spuds is another high volume of water use crop, and so they will have, you know, everyone's adjusting to that. The grain crop, oh boy, the grain crop's not looking good. That's probably one of the bigger problems is, and a lot of this is because of Mother Nature's, she's not been playing nice this year. She's been playing pretty dirty. The water, we will run out. Now, as far as the aquifer water, the groundwater, it is, as I've said before, we are in drought mode already and have been for many years.
Yeah.
And so we've already kind of adjusted. We are on our restricted flow or our allotments, whatever you want to call it. As long as we can stay within those allotments, according to this agreement, everything's fine. But at the end of this year, all parties of the what we call the 2024 mitigated settlement agreement, you know, this agreement that we had, they have the opportunity to either, I don't know how you'd say it, re-enlist or sign back up. Everyone has to, by the end of this year, say, yes, we are going forward, or no, this party is getting out of this agreement. And so, therefore, we have still one more year to then work out a new mitigation plan or tweak whatever we got. But that's a big deadline coming up at the end of this year that I am worried about how our drought will impact that.
So, Brian, this kind of reminds me of how Congress works now with continuing resolutions. Like, they do these clunky, cobbled together deals to just buy them a few more weeks or a few more months. With water, it's, you know, a year or two. Will we ever get back to there just being this idea that we can feel confident year to year that if the water's available, that farmers will be able to irrigate? Or we, because it's a policy mess, and I think you would agree with that. Is this just the way it's going to be from here on out?
That's probably the short-term answer, yes. This is how it will be until we change something. And the change that I'm probably talking about, everybody probably can guess, is we have to increase our storage capacity, especially of the surface water.
Yep.
Now, whether or not we take that surface runoff, you know, as I've said many times, we're still losing 2 million acre feet on average. Now, yes, on years like this year, there isn't 2 million acre feet. We didn't even lose 1 gallon of it. Well, we did. We lost what the Bureau of Rec flushed down out of our system. But we had no spring runoff this year. But on other years, we've had as high as 10 million acre feet of water. You know, in some of our snowmageddon years, it's just massive amounts of water. And we still only have of the Upper Valley system only can hold 4.5 million acre feet. That's what all the reservoirs all combined hold, basically.
Yeah.
So if we're still on average losing 2 million, that's a lot of water. And if we had another Palisades and an American Falls reservoir, just that's the size of what 2 million acre feet, you know, a little bit more than that, that would make a big difference. But of course, that's years down the road. And and this is where we need to keep pushing, even though everybody's getting tired of the broken record of more storage, more storage, more storage. That's the answer to make this to where this isn't a continuing resolution of water.
So I know we always talk about rebuilding the Teton Dam, and I'm all in on that. But that's years and years down the road. There's some political problems with that. I think we were talking with Stephanie Mickelson, and she said, culturally in Rexburg, they're still kind of PTSD after that. They don't want a dam upstream from them because of what happened 50 years ago. Are there other sites where you could build a high-capacity reservoir, or is that really kind of our only option right now?
No, we couldn't. We are currently doing a study, and this was what Senator Cook and the legislature all proposed actually in 2025, and we continued to support that this year in 2026 to do studies and to have the Bureau of Reclamation, because that's who we got to go through. You know, as I'm sitting here yelling at them, now I'm going to turn around and say, please be nice and play with us and get this study done quickly. But we are doing a study. And this study will identify other options, in which we're also telling them these other options. One option is we can actually raise various dams around here that are already in place. The main one, of course, would be Jackson Lake Dam. That one, if we was to raise that 10 feet, which we have to work on that dam anyway. It's due for a major overhaul because it's so old. Yep. And so we've got to go do something there. But 10 feet on that reservoir, if we raised it up, would add 300,000 acre feet, which is more than the Teton Dam. All right.
Okay.
And so just by that one thing alone.
So that's our lowest hanging fruit right now, right?
It is as far as massive capacity. But we also have regulations and rule changes like at the American Falls Reservoir. We have unintentionally through spring flooding had more water in the American Falls Reservoir than was technically legally allowed. And so we're going, well, if we've managed to have more water in that reservoir and it not break that dam, you know, because of the safety concerns, you know, the Bureau of Reclamation, Army Corps of Engineers say, you know, the water can only go up this high on the side of the dam before then that's enough. You know, we could maybe put another foot or two in that reservoir. A foot at American Falls is 55,000 or 50,000 acre feet of water.
Okay.
So, you know, 2 feet in American Falls, we maybe would have some minor flooding of, you know, we'd back up the reservoir a little bit more into possibly the reservation. That was some of the concerns and stuff like that. But we have a lot of other low-hanging fruit. But as we're learning from the Anderson Dam project, which is over in Boise, even raising a dam can take 10 years.
Okay.
You know, and this is where we got to keep pushing to get these solutions done quicker and quicker than what we are currently experiencing.
Yeah.
Speed is important. Okay, I'm just going to ask the question, the American Falls one, because Idaho would be over that one for certain. How much does the legislature play into that? Do the engineers just say, yes, go ahead and do it, and you can do it? Or do we have to pass new laws and the water board needs to get involved and everything? What's the legal minutia that you have to go through?
The legal minutia is that we have to get the federal government, because they're the ones who are in charge of dam safety, to change the rules. And this is where we have the same problem with the Ryrie Dam and their flood control, because the Ryrie Reservoir is basically a flood control reservoir, and it's also, we use it for what we call mitigation ink and tribal water and stuff like that. But they have a rule there that it's got to be emptied so much every year, whether or not it's like this year. Of course,
we could have kept it.
We could have kept it.
Yeah.
But those regulations, and this is where some of this is just simply regulation changes. And of course, that's a lot easier to do than rebuilding a dam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you can do it in one session.
Right. Okay. And but it's not necessarily an Idaho problem, as in we have to request that, but it's a federal problem, as in they have to approve it.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. That's surface water. Are we looking okay with groundwater?
Well, the groundwater, of course, changes slowly. You know, this low snowpack year will have an impact on the on the aquifer simply because there's less water that's leaching through everywhere, you know. But as far as the aquifer health, I wouldn't say it's changed that much within the last year or two. And our pumping, because we are lessening the impacts of our pumping, we're all restricted to this amount, I would say it's pretty much normal. How's that?
Question.
Okay.
And I'm thinking loopholes here.
Sure.
I get in this mindset when I do my taxes too. So
sure.
Can we assert our entire groundwater right and pump water into a reservoir so we have more surface water?
You know, we could, except for lots of regulations that won't let you do that. How's that?
Other people have thought about this, too.
Yeah. We actually have a canal down in the Burley area, or Rupert area, or whatever you want to call it, in which they have part of their canal. It's called the A&B Canal, and I wrote a big thing about it because they were kind of playing a little interesting. They were looking at loopholes, all right? But part of that, they get water out of the surface system, and then when the surface system is low, they actually have pumps on the canal that pump out of the aquifer and dump into the canal. And we have proposed, as the groundwater IGWA, whatever you want to call it, Idaho groundwater appropriators, we have proposed doing things like this, and of course, they are very much opposed to allowing any more drawing out of the aquifer of any water. And so we always keep running roadblocks there.
Yeah. All right. In the water discussion over the last few years, Idaho Power has been the gigantic boogeyman for some people.
Uh-huh.
And so tell us what their role currently is. And then you also mentioned that they have a role in cloud seeding, which people are kind of scared of and not sure of. So two questions there.
Okay. Idaho Power is always behind the scenes. They're very good at that, and which you have to give them credit. You know, this is a major part of their issues, hydropower, and so they should be involved. But it's just like this, the 90,000 acre feet that the Bureau of Rec was going to take from East Idaho. We were trying to get that changed to where this year on the year drought, we didn't watch 90,000 acre feet leave our system. And so we were trying to do water transfers between our basin and like the Payette and Boise River Basin and also the Dorshak Basin. Dorshak is Idaho's largest reservoir, and it's 2.5 million acre feet up there, and it is in a lot better shape than the rest of us. They use that for flood control for the Columbia and the Lower Snake a lot. And so as we're sitting here looking at, you know, the fish don't care where the water comes from. It's just it's volume of water pushing these juvenile salmon out. And so but Idaho Power, they care whether or not the water comes from East Idaho, because then it passes 17 hydropower projects all the way out to Lewiston. All right. And so if we shorten or move water from another basin, then they miss some of these opportunities to create power. And so this is always the subtleties that Idaho Power is in the background with. As far as, your second part of your question.
Cloud seeding.
Idaho Power has an agreement with the state of Idaho, and the Water Board is what we call it, in which they are actually the ones who are paying for the cloud seeding efforts. Idaho Power is. We are simply reimbursing Idaho Power for their costs of doing the cloud seeding. And so they are the ones who have to pay for the ground generators. They are the ones who have to pay for the airplanes flying. And so this is where Idaho Power's involvement is in cloud seeding. But cloud seeding is, there's a lot of misunderstanding about cloud seeding. We don't cloud seed only in the winter months. We're only cloud seeding for snow, and we're only cloud seeding in various areas. We will cloud seed in East Idaho as far as we're concerned. You'd look at the Island Park, the Grand Teton, that area. That's where we're cloud seeding. We have very specific areas that we fly. We are cloud seeding now in also like Boise Mountains East. Not west. In fact, Bogus Basin, if you know where that is, I was laughing that they were trying to make sure Bogus Basin had a good ski year. We're not even cloud seeding over Bogus Basin. We're cloud seeding to the east of it. And then we are now also cloud seeding in...
Is that because you're essentially giving water to Oregon if you were to cloud seed that close to the border?
No, it's not that. It's that's where we want. We want the impact of the cloud seeding.
Okay.
You know, that's where we're trying to get the snow generated.
Yeah.
So they're trying to get the snow generated for the Boise area reservoirs. Okay. We're trying to get it generated for our area reservoirs.
Gotcha.
And then we're doing it now. We started to do it with the state of Utah, in which we're the Bear River Basin, because they're trying to get it all into the Great Salt Lake. And of course that area doesn't necessarily have a whole lot of snow at times too, and so we're trying to increase that snowpack. But with this year, with the weather that we had, we cloud seeded about half of what we normally do, because we're waiting for those perfect conditions, because nobody wants to waste any money, you know, as far as doing cloud seeding. And the next thing is it's not contrails. If you can see it, you know, we get all these calls, oh, you're up there cloud seeding, I can see the contrail. No, cloud seeding's always done in a cloud. You know, this is one of the reasons why we've talked about using drones. In fact, they are using drones because of safety concerns, these airplanes flying in the mountains in the middle of a cloud.
Yeah.
And so this is where there's a lot of misconceptions, you know. And I will probably be the first one to agree, I don't know how effective cloud seeding is, and really what it's, you know, how much we're getting for our bang for our buck. But it's something that we've been doing for a long time, seems to be giving us some return. That's always an arguable, but I don't necessarily believe it's doing us any harm. Now, of course, you got the tin hat conspiracy people that think we're spraying stuff to give us all COVID again or something like that.
Control the populate, right? That's true.
So, but that's Idaho Power's role in cloud seeding.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. We have time maybe for one really quick question.
Let's turn it to him.
Yeah.
What do you think we need to talk about that we haven't talked about?
Just probably, I joked, you guys said on, you know, the first thing this morning, you hoped I was bringing in donuts, and I brought you in a dozen donuts.
You did bring donuts, and I specifically said, do not bring donuts, and you don't follow instructions very well, Brian.
I do not, but I was just joking about how I've told everyone I grow 24 million large McDonald's order French fries, and I'd figured it out that I grow basically 20 million dozen donuts in grain. That's what my farm produces in grain. And you know, you start looking at the water shortage and how that would impact it. You know, if you keep it in dozens of donuts, I figured, you know, I could cut my yield clear down to where I was only growing 12 million dozen donuts.
Wow.
And, you know, so all this lack of water will have an impact. And, you know, and I figured it out at $13 for a box of donuts. That's a difference of $104 million in the economy.
Yeah.
That just my farm could add and have an effect for lack of water and the drought conditions that we're having.
Yeah.
And so, you know, everybody always says, well, you're growing crops, and no, we're growing foods. Probably the last thing that I will address is, you know, during this summer, I've heard a lot of talk about, you know, farmers watering roads and stuff like that. And the farmer car wash, as we joke and call it, you know, we are trying very hard. This isn't something that we take lightly. These are electric and mechanical things that go wrong on pivots. No farmer really wants to see that, because number one, we don't want to hear from all the neighbors as they all get mad at us.
Yeah.
But two, we are trying to conserve water. And so this is, you know, everyone is doing their best to get by on a short year. And so that's the position we are in.
Okay. Brian Murdoch, always good to see you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Seven, and thanks for the donuts. 752 now on News Talk 107.9.